listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back here to the Hometown Losers Podcast. It's session number 15. I am joined always here by Adam and OJ. How are we doing today, gentlemen?
I'm doing great.
Doing wonderful. Glad to be back.
I'm doing sublime. Yeah.
Sublime. There you go.
Yeah.
Doing great. Can't complain. I'm excited about, our new teams joining the crew here, so to speak, and St. Louis SC, great start, and Battlehawks, we're getting ready for the opening weekends here in St. Louis, so some exciting things to actually talk about coming up, so.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we definitely have a lot of, like, hope for these new teams, and they have definitely caught fire and have gotten, you know, I mean, there's a lot of backing right now for St. Louis sports, which is great because obviously for a long time, it was just the two-headed monster between the Blues and the Cardinals. Well, Blues suck and Cardinals aren't doing anything right now, obviously, because the MLB season hasn't started. Right. So it's great to have those two other ones to kind of really
keep us entertained.
I get. Yeah, soften the blow.
Soften the blow. So, you know, right now it's like, well, the season feels pretty much over for the Blues. So it's like, all right, take our minds off of that pain for right now. So, you know.
Please do.
Yeah.
Because right now, just a current update, I guess we'll get into it real quick for the Blues is right now they're 24th in the NHL. 11th in the West, 6th in the Central, just for anybody that's counting for like the Central and the West. I did think it was very interesting to see our current draft chances and our projection right now. So if we're at the 24th, in the NHL, we have a current 5% chance at the first pick and 5.4% chance for the second overall pick. If we don't get either those two picks, we will draft automatically in the position, which would be the 21st overall or 8th position. They changed the rules a little bit when Seattle came into this. They recognized that there wasn't a giant disparity between who finished last and who finished second to last. I think the prior percentage chances were like it was like 18.3 to like 11.3. Well, now they're projecting that it's going to be whoever finishes dead last in the NHL has got 25% chance to take home that first, first overall pick. So it's kind of interesting. So it doesn't affect our numbers at all from like the prior years and the prior models. It only affects like 1 through 5, so to speak. Oh, well, but there are some. Go ahead.
Oh well, I did want to let you know that today I went to tankathon.com. And I just simmed the lottery again and again until the Blues won. And they won before Chicago did. So let's take this.
You know what's up? I literally did the same thing today, OJ. Literally one click. We got pick number one, number two, wish for Chicago. That was my first click, dude. Not even joking. So I'm like, all right, we've got a chance. Yep.
There we go. You're right here.
Yep. Could you imagine that? That right there. So say that happens, right? Say Adam's click actually happens where the Blues get the number one pick. Obviously, we'll take Connor Bedard. And then the Blackhawks take the second pick. And it really does depend on who they want to take at that point in time. But can you imagine the renewed on the rivalry between the two of us? Because it's like, hey, we have our superstar versus your superstar. Like, that would be pretty interesting for sure.
That would basically, that would be our rebuild forward. Like, Doug Armstrong, I heard him on the radio saying that he basically makes it sound like he thinks it'll take a year or two of us missing the playoffs to get back to being competitive again. But, more pessimistic people would certainly say it's going to be longer than that. But if we got Connor Bedard, that would just kind of – I mean, I would be much more inclined to believe Doug Armstrong's projections, you know?
Yeah, so you give him a year to kind of get his feet wet and start playing NHL level hockey, and then the next year you can start being able to crank up the hopes a little bit more.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. And especially because he's going to need to be made to play Berube's style. So, like, you have to be willing to, like, bench him or do whatever you have to in case he gets a little shithead attitude on you. You know what I'm saying?
For sure.
You need to get some growing pains in there. Prove to him that you're for real and then make him into, like, a great player instead of just, like, half a player. Like, Draisaitl.
I think it's going to be – you're not wrong there. I think it's going to be interesting to see, obviously, what ends up happening out of this. You know, we don't know what we don't know. We're not terribly too certain who is really going to, like, fall to us when it comes to the draft and how everybody – like, if, for example, if we're down at, like, eighth or ninth, I know it's not really, like, defensive heavy per se on what the draft is looking like. But do we try to go find a defenseman, or do we just do what we always do and grab a, you know, winger or probably a center? Because that's what you would want to do most likely, because a center can always play wing too. You know, like the thing is, Axel Sedin. Hold on. Let me look this dude up, because he plays for this in the Sweden area. Yeah, Axel, I know is his name. Sedin Pelika is projected to be one of the like the top defensemen essentially in this draft, but he's only 5'11", 181 pounds. That's not saying much. I mean, he can still skate a lot, but he's like an offensive defenseman. But we don't. I don't think we need another Torrey Krug. That's kind of what he sounds like to me. You know what I mean?
Torrey Krug's much smaller than that, though.
Like, yeah, I understand. I'm talking about skill set. I'm talking about skill set wise.
I mean, this guy's more like a Justin Falk size, right? So, I mean, I guarantee you he gets to the NHL. He's 6 foot all of a sudden, all right? Like,
yeah, right.
So he's basically Justin Falk you're looking at size-wise. And then I don't – he must have such a high rating because of his skill or something. But I don't know.
Yeah, again, that's just what people are projecting him is to have, you know, a play style – just looking at the names, it's going to be essentially like a Torrey Krug or Justin Falk, an offensive defenseman, essentially. I don't necessarily think that we need that, but that's what you want out of younger talent, so to speak.
You said he's the top defenseman in this draft by a lot of people?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Where are they projecting him to go?
Around, well, it depends, obviously, on needs, but they're talking about if you just look at the pre-ranks and then just filling in names without needs and stuff like that. They're projecting them around like 13th or 15th overall, if that makes sense. So out of the players that are
reach for sure if we took him with our pick.
Yeah, for exactly, because that's what I'm saying. But like
15th overall.
Because they have right now what it's falling into us is DeBoer Dvorsky, and I don't know, this guy's from Slovakia. I don't know anything about this guy. He's 6'1", 201 pounds. He plays obviously in Slovakia. But anyways, I think it's going to be interesting to see what the draft ends up holding for us if we end up getting move up to a higher position or not. So we can potentially get bumped down to ninth. What will end up happening out of that is a team behind us will move up in the draft, which obviously affects our draft slot and stuff like that. So for anybody that's listening that doesn't fully understand the NHL draft, they do things a little bit differently. So first and foremost, so you can't just continue the tank over and over and over again. They have it to where in a 5-year span, you cannot win the draft lottery more than twice. They do this for a competition standpoint. So like, for example, the Edmonton Oilers were so bad for so long and they got the number one pick 3 times in 5 years. That is no longer the case. That cannot happen anymore. That happened when Vegas came into the league. The other thing too, is to make it to where it's not so back in 2017, I'm trying to remember the team. I think it was 2017. I'm pretty sure Colorado Avalanche had like the first overall pick. So they sucked in 2017. But I think they end up no. It was the Red Wings. The Red Wings, and like it was, and I don't remember the year, but it was like 2017, 2016. They had the number one overall pick. They end up drawing fourth. Like they lost out of all these top picks because of how the lottery draft went. So they said, okay, well, we're gonna have some sort of stabilization. Essentially, you can only move up a maximum of 10 spots. in the draft. So if for whatever reason, because they do pick numbers 1 through 16, so say the 16th place team, the team that just missed the playoffs, if they come into this and they're the first one out, they don't get the first overall pick. They only move up to sixth overall. And at that point in time, all the drawings would be, you know, just sequential and number in order. So it's going to be interesting, again, to see what ends up happening out of that, because I think there's so many moving parts when it comes to the draft and who gets the top pick and stuff like that. But my question to you guys here, I mean, I hate to say this, but I'm kind of rooting against the Blues. I want them to lose. I want them to be able to get higher and higher into this, to get a higher percentage than 5%. Because if not, what kind of quality player are you going to get? You know what I mean? In the you're in the top 10, but you're at the back end of the top 10. And I mean, I get it's a deep draft. But.
Obviously, at this point, the season is over for us. I say tank. Obviously, I know that, you know, there's some fans will say, you should always root for the Blues, but I'm rooting for the Blues for the future, not necessarily this, you know. And so that's me looking long term. I would rather them tank right now, get that higher percentage. But every time I'm simming this draft, you know, it's picking, we're picking Dvorsky, as you mentioned, from Slovakia. So every time, no matter, looks like I don't think we're going to get high. My gut is I don't think we're going to get bumped up all that much, in my opinion.
I don't think we're going to get that lucky.
We're going to get that lucky. I just knowing how things are right now, I don't think we're going to get that lucky. So don't get your hopes up. Everybody's trying to hope for the best, and I don't think we're going to get that lucky. So we'll see. Could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, me too. I mean, personally, I always want them to win, because I think that it's important for teams to have the right mindset and all that. I'm a big believer in a lot of intangible stuff, not that it has the biggest effect, but it does have a real effect. So I don't want the team to get too just comfortable with losing, right? Because you can tell some organizations are, and they just lose all the time. They never, no matter what breaks their way, they're just never able to turn it into any kind of results because they're losing culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to make sure the Blues don't sink to that also.
I get it. I mean, but there's only 18, 19 games left in the season at this point, so we're already pretty much used to that right now. I understand. I get your point, though, for sure.
Yeah, I will speak to OJ's point as well, too, that I think really, because it wasn't too long ago that we were talking about the Blues leaving St. Louis, that they were looking for a buyer outside the city of St. Louis that would end up moving the Blues out of St. Louis, because, again, we were just so bad. But it took Tom Stillman and a bunch of other investors to say, nope, we are St. Louis and we are here to stay. And also for Tom to be very aggressive about how he approached the team. I want to win a Stanley Cup. I want to go out there and win. And having that vision with Doug Armstrong, it changed the organization's, not obviously future too, but to OJ's point, it really changed the culture too. This is a winning arena.
For sure.
We're very good at home. We are going to stand on this ground. And we're going to get some, we're going to get results. Obviously, making it to the Western Conference Finals back in 2017, and then winning a Stanley Cup in 2019. We've had that success. Having sustained success, some of that stuff's obviously outside of our control. But I do agree with OJ that you don't want to, just really get comfortable with losing, for sure.
And I get that. But the point is, though, is that I think that the vision here is that we're going to we're in a period now of change. There's only six guys left from the 2019 winning season on our roster. At this point, we are reshaping the team, and we're obviously investing in some young players, obviously in a lot of draft picks here. This will be a new team going forward, and I think the idea is that we needed that because the dynamics just weren't there.
we tried and multiple times to try to get that spark back, and it just wasn't working. So at this point, it's like, okay, let's tear it down. Let's build up from scratch again, so to speak. I mean, I know we're not doing a complete tear down, but obviously moving some, you know, moving, we're going to make some changes, especially with some of the UFAs while we have the opportunity, which I think were smart moves for sure for Armstrong.
For sure.
But at this point it's okay. We're going to have a fresh team. We're going to have some, you know, great guys coming up. You know, it might take a couple years to get back on our groove of things, but I still think that we have them, and we will have the mentality that we will be a winning team. You know, we will be a winning city.
Yeah, yeah.
But otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this for we wouldn't be doing what we're doing right now. You know, I think that that's the reason why Berube is still employed. You know what I mean? I think that Army believes that we have that magic here. We can make it work.
Well, I think you're. I hope you're right. That I mean, I assume you will be. I also kind of a. I believe also they'll come through it with the same attitude. I just don't think they're going to lose enough games to get down there. I just don't think they have that losing attitude yet, so they're not going to lose. Like, but certainly not this year. They're not going to be able to get that, you know, top.
See, the thing about – I personally – this is just me, but I personally believe that we're going to end up being in the top six. I think that we're going to move up two spots, so to speak. I just feel like I think our chances are going to improve from where they're at currently, because there's some teams below that seem to be doing a little bit better. The Ducks are, I think, a team that potentially could even be better than what they are currently. I don't know. But actually, and this is very interesting. So I didn't even know Tankathon was a thing. I've heard of it, but I didn't know it did what it did. I just went to the mock draft. Second click, number one pick. Connor Bedard goes to the St. Louis Blues. So maybe they know something we don't.
There you go. And it was my first click that, you know, we got the number one spot. And I know there's two different spots, you know, two different sections on their website. One is actually a sim draft and one is actually just simming, you know, the lottery. And I was originally doing the lottery and I literally one click and we got the first spot. So, hey, maybe that's a sign. So,
yeah.
I mean, or potentially it's just you and I need to run the lottery. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, you remember – in 2019, Money Puck was their model was the first one that actually liked the Blues before a lot of other people did. A lot of people thought, oh, it's over. Money Puck sitting there giving them like the second best odds of winning the Stanley Cup. And guess what happened?
Well, just there you go.
Situation.
I'm going to say they should have put a hell of a bet on that. So,
yeah.
Well, yeah, it's going to be interesting. We'll obviously get more details as the Blues continue to hopefully tank or, you know, just what the NHL landscape looks like before we go into the draft. But let's get to some more, I guess, uplifting, more hopeful things that don't make me want to just punch myself in the face. We got some
good news.
Yeah. Let's talk about a little bit about Cardinals in the spring training here. I'm going to go through and just rattle off some stats to you guys. Some of these are, I would say, antiquated at this point because of the fact that some of these players are getting ready for the World Baseball Classic. But I just kind of want to point out something here for us. So Arenado continues to tear the hell out of the cover of the baseball. He's now batting with an average of .571. He's only got two doubles and two homers and three RBIs, but his slugging's at 1.143. It's pretty damn impressive at this point. Goldie's fallen off a little bit here. He's at .417 on average. The one homer, one double, one RBI, slugging at .750. Ivan Herrera, guys, this is Ivan. Conversation. I would say Ivan, but yeah, but you're right, Ivan Herrera.
That's pronounced.
What's up?
I'm guessing that's how it's pronounced.
No, I've heard it called. Actually, I've heard it said both ways, but I think it is Ivan. I think that's how he pronounces his name. But this is going to be an interesting one, right? So Ivan Herrera is batting .429. In all fairness, he's 3-for-7, right? So he's at 7 at bats, 3 hits, and 1 RBI. Contreras, on the other hand, here, all this money that we've given him, he's 2-for-13 for .154. He's got a double out of one of his hits, an RBI, an on-base percentage of .231.
Yeah.
It's spring training.
It's terrible. It's terrible, man.
You're hitting them. What do you say, OJ?
We're paying you all this money. What have you done for me in spring training so far? Nothing.
Well, you just don't want that to be, you know, a predecessor to obviously something else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because
most people aren't even taking it seriously at this point, especially vets. I mean, you can't play that card yet. Wait till we're like,
oh no, of course not. Of course not.
Like this.
For sure. But yeah. it's still not promising to see that for sure. So.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, then you also have to admit that Jordan Walker is extremely promising.
I was going to say, yeah, Jordan Walker, he's 429, I think, like 12 hits, average, two of them were
three home runs, seven RBIs, one stolen base, doubles. Too. The only person stolen base, which to me is an effort thing, too, especially at I wouldn't say effort thing, but you're willing to put it on the line. We're like Donovan, who's also kind of or Edmund. You know, Bro-Neal, some of our faster guys, they're probably not willing to take a stolen base because, you know, they don't want to slide and, you know, twist their ankle and stuff like that, whatever, going into the season. Totally understand that. But I like seeing Walker's effort out there. You know what I mean? And he's slugging 857.
It's definitely encouraging seeing him so well. You know, it's awesome.
Yeah.
I will say some of that base stealing is like actually, you know, base stealing itself is a skill. So like,
absolutely, we're gonna see more of that this season. So
feel as comfortable
bigger bases
as like Tommy Edman does. Like, yeah, he's fast, but if he doesn't feel as comfortable timing up the pitcher and stuff, then he might just get out too much to make it worth it, right? So I think that's
100%.
One of those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that let me ask you both here at this point in time, and I'll start with you, OJ. Do you think that Walker has done enough in spring training to earn a spot or earn a roster spot? So I should say just a spot on the roster. That's what I was getting at.
Not yet, because like I said, it's still so early. You got to wait till you're fairly certain pitchers are actually being serious. Like right now is the time of the year where some pitchers go out there and I'm just going to throw this pitch all day because I'm working on it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, 100% makes sense. Yeah.
It isn't even close to like simulating real competition. Mm-hmm. Unless you get to late spring where guys are trying to like, you know, just cross their I's and dot their T's and get ready for the season, then it's going to be a little different. If he's still hitting this way, then he's made it a lot more interesting. But I still think he maybe could use some work in the outfield. Just from what I've seen.
So maybe not the bat, but the offensive or the outfield positioning. And stuff like that as well.
Especially since you have like three pretty good incumbents, right? Like, give them a chance to hold the spot too before you go bringing him up. If either one of them, if any of them is doing just like terrible come, you know, like a month or so in, then you look at bringing him up for them, right?
Makes sense. Yeah, I definitely like that input. Adam, what do you think? Do you think Walker has done enough at this point?
Not quite yet. I think we've only played, 9 or 10 games so far in spring training. So I don't think that's really enough. 12. Oh, is it? I thought it was only 10. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay. The point is that we just haven't done enough to determine what he's going to be like long term. And I think he probably needs to spend a little more time out in the outfield as well. That's a thing, you know, it's encouraging to see him batting well, but at the same time, you know, we'll see how it plays out, but I really think that you're going to have to get later into the spring. I'm hopeful that he does eventually make the team. But I don't think he's ready quite yet. We'll see. He's on the right track though.
And I do kind of want to add the caveat that if I'm the Cardinals and I told him that, hey, you're fighting for a spot this spring and you're still hitting like this at the end of spring, then I think you almost have to put him on the team at that point. Otherwise, you ever trust anything you say.
Exactly. Yeah,
no, for sure.
He has to fight with for a promises. Spot. Right, you can't go in there with promises, and then he delivers on those on his end, and you don't deliver, and you just go, "Oh man!" It reminds me of the South Park episode where they're like, What is it? Where Kyle's parents are like, yeah, we'll totally let you go to this concert if you solve world peace. And he signs he gets Castro and all and all the terrorist leaders or whatever to like say, oh, we're gonna lay down our arms or whatever. And they're just like, holy crap, you did it. He's like, yeah, so can I go? No, because we didn't think you could actually do it. Like, I mean, exactly. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so you just don't want to have that, because then at that point he's going to want out of St. Louis. He's not going to trust them at all.
Yeah, you got like a Chris Bryant situation, like with the Cubs.
Exactly right. Yeah, that's a good point.
Also, just wanted to, I was going to
go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, because I want to change the subject quickly.
Oh, all I was going to say to it is I definitely agree with you guys. I think that. And I personally believe that the incumbents are also not falling off the face of the earth. They're not doing as well as Walker has per se, but they also necessarily don't have something to prove. So, OJ, to your point, they're kind of like the veterans out there where they can kind of coast. And again, you have to do so much to overthrow the incumbent. And Walker has done enough, I think, that it has definitely like got a lot of eyebrows raised and a lot of people are excited about him. But I just don't necessarily think that he's done enough right now to overthrow one of our positional outfielders right now. I think that your analysis, OJ, too, is also very, to me, I didn't even really think about it because I always think of it the bat. But I do think that he could potentially work on some of the his outfield positioning and stuff like that, because I did read something just recently said that he's not looked bad, but he doesn't look like he's seasoned yet. And again, that just comes from experience.
Right, exactly. So, that might be a legitimate reason to send him down, but I don't know that he's bad enough to where, if he has like an incredible bat, you wouldn't want him on your team anyway, right?
Yeah, so. For sure. All right, Adam, you were going to say something?
I just wanted to bring up about Jack Flaherty and his first start as well. And I wanted to get your take on his outing, because I thought it looked pretty encouraging, so I wanted to get your take on what your opinion was.
Was there a specific person that you want to talk to first?
Jack Flaherty, our pitcher?
No. Did you want me or OJ to go first? That's what I was getting at.
Oh, sorry. You. That's fine.
So the thing about it was, he looked better, right? But he only pitched three innings, gave up three runs, right? If I remember correctly, he struck out five. But I remember he got five strikeouts. I'm trying to actually remember too. No, hold on. He only gave up like one run, didn't he? I don't remember. Again, I've it's been like one of those things like in and out that I've been able to really watch for the like spring training and stuff like that. Yeah, so I was right. So he did pitch three innings, ERA of three. So that would actually mean, yeah, he got one run in those three innings, right? If I'm doing the ERA correctly, and a whip of 0.67. The things that I did see were like highlights essentially of the strikeouts. He had a lot of movement on his ball. The velocity seemed to be back a little bit. I don't know if he's going to be as dominant as he was, obviously, in the short period of time when he was chasing after Bob Gibson. I don't know if he's necessarily going to be a front of the end or like a front of the rotation pitcher at this point in time. He's got to show me consistency, because that's the biggest thing that has been missing about Jack Flaherty. Besides that one time where he was chasing history, he hasn't been able to show consistency, whether it was due to injury, whether it was due to mental things that were going on, whatever have you. It's been that thing for me, if that makes sense.
Yep, definitely. Yeah. I agree with you. I definitely see him. Being it towards the end of the rotation, but I'm hopeful that as long as he stays healthy, that he'll give us he'll be decent for us. So we'll see. Obviously, OJ, if you want to give your input.
Yeah, so I actually read an article about this on Viva Alberto's, written by JP Hill, and so basically what he pointed out is that Flaherty in this last start, Flaherty's velocity and RPMs on his pitches are kind of back to where they were in like 2019.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So very encouraging sign. So we'll see what happens, because you could argue that it really has mostly been injuries keeping him back.
Yep.
So if he's finally feeling good, you know, we might have an ace and not without even realizing, right? So,
yep,
so
right, for sure. And obviously, my, you know, our area of concern to me, it really surrounds Wainwright right now, because,
yeah,
you know, he's been, he definitely will need to show some major improvements, you know,
I'm sorry, about Wainwright, did you guys see that he's pitching game one for US?
That's what I was getting ready to say, yes, is he needs to show some improvements during the WBC, actually. so it'll be interesting. Yeah.
Well, let's hope he doesn't sink the U.S. right off the bat.
Exactly. For sure.
So hey, here's the thing about it. Right.
They're probably it's Great Britain. So they're probably like, we can beat these guys with a high school pitcher. Let's go.
Yeah. And I think this is when we're going to start seeing what Wainwright is going to be for the season. Right. Because obviously in the two outings that he had, in spring training, he definitely did not look concerned about what was going on. Obviously, the ERA of 7.2 shows that. didn't look great. But I think this is when he's going to start running into, like, so OJ, to your point, you know, veterans at this point in time in spring training don't necessarily care as much, right? But now there's actually something on the line. You know, you're representing your country. You're obviously, there's prize money that's involved as well. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think that this is where we're going to see where Adam Wainwright's at. And I did think that was interesting that they chose him. And he has apparently, don't know, but because I do have this written down, he is apparently is the number one in the rotation for Team USA, which I thought was very odd. He had a good year last year up until like the last like six or seven starts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But it's going to be, it's just going to be very interesting, too.
Yeah.
But we can use that as a segue to talk about the World Baseball Classic here, as we know is coming up. I'm very excited about this. Should be fun. This is obviously not as nearly as popular as the World Cup obviously in the world's eyes, or even really in the United States eyes. But I think this, if we have a couple good series for the World Baseball Classic, it can eventually become a bigger thing, right? So real quick with you guys, I'm going to go through some of the groups, in the countries that are in these groups, and let's get some predictions about who we think is going to come out of those groups. So there's four total groups with five teams in them each. Each team will play each other one time. So they'll play a total of four games. The two highest winning percentages, so the two best records, will be the winners of those groups, and they will move on. Then after that point, it's I believe that they do best of five series, or it could be best of seven series as well, out of the group play. So in Group A, we have the Netherlands, who are 2-0 currently, because obviously this started before our last podcast. It started right after our last podcast, and it is, I should say. So the Netherlands are 2-0. You have Italy, that's 1-0. Panama, 1-1. Chinese, Taipei, 0-1, and Cuba is 0-2. So I'm going to start with you, Adam. Out of the five countries that we got here, who do you think you got coming out of Group A?
Group A, I would probably say, well, just obviously based upon the performance we've seen, I would probably side with Netherlands here. Being the victor in the Group A.
Who else do you have out of Group A?
Potentially Panama.
Yeah, that's exactly what I got. I got Netherlands and Panama. I think Panama's roster is too deep. The Netherlands have looked very good as a baseball team.
Yeah.
And they're 2-0 right now. You know what I mean? Yeah, so they're already halfway
there. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think that they're a shoe-in at this point. I think Panama has a real chance, though, of getting out of actually succeeding. I mean, I think they're 1-1 right now, but still, I think they've got a decent roster. So.
Yeah, and they lost to the Netherlands. That was their one loss. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So.
Yep.
So I think that goes into it. OJ, who do you got coming out of Group A?
I don't know. I mean, I guess Netherlands. See, I'm not exactly 100% sure of the format, but Netherlands already has two wins. They already beat Cuba and Panama, which is teams that I would have thought would beat them for sure. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. So what? the format is the top two teams will advance.
The top how many?
Top two.
Top two.
Okay. Well, let's see. Cuba already lost to Italy. Also, so that's they're not.
Yeah, and Cuba's 0-2.
Yeah, 0-2. So I think they're I think they're going to be out of it. They've got a long way to crawl back from. They're going to have to win two more games, so that's going to be tough for them.
But
just to stay in it.
Yeah, so I guess the same, probably Netherlands, Panama.
Panama, yeah. And this one's a little bit weird because it's easier because obviously we already have some results, but it's also kind of harder because you're like, how the hell are the Netherlands this good? I mean, yes, they have Xander Bogaerts, right? They have quite a few pitchers and stuff like that as well, but you definitely look at this on paper and out of this I'm going, okay, cool, Panama and Cuba, who's got next, you know what I mean? Like, yep. But obviously Cuba not looking great, 0-2, losing to Italy. Ooh, they gotta take that on the chin, right?
Yep, for sure.
All right, let's take a look at Group B here. In Group B we have Australia, who's 1-0, Japan, that's 1-0, the Czech Republic, who have not played yet, China 0-1, and Korea 0-1. I'll go ahead and start this one here. I like me some Australia. I love that story. I have friends in Australia, out there in Melbourne. I hope that they can pull this off, but I just don't think so. I think it's going to be Japan and Korea. They're just two stronger teams, right? Korea's obviously always been very good for baseball. Japan's always been very good for baseball too. I like to see that the fact that Australia has won so far. But, you know, it's just going to be one of those things that I don't think that it's necessarily going to be fully sustainable for them to get into the top groups. OJ, let's get your take on Group B. Who do you got coming out of Group B?
Oh, I was going to say the same thing. Those are the two best baseball countries in that list. And but Australia did get the better of Korea.
But, they did, yes.
I don't know. I think Korea's going to come back. Maybe it's just because my boy Tommy Edmonds on that team.
Right, but yeah. I'm
facing them, so let's go Japan and Korea.
All right, Adam, what about you? How do you see Group B?
Yeah, that's actually Japan and Korea, you know, with our boy Tommy Edmonds over there, I think are going to be the victors here. I think in this pool, they're going to be the two strongest teams for sure. I think that's a no-brainer. So I mean there is some possibilities around maybe the Czech Republic, you know, maybe they're an unlikely like underdog here, but we'll see.
Yeah, we haven't seen them play yet, you know, it's kind of hard to tell, you know, based off of that, what it potentially could be. All right, let's go to Group C here. This is when things get real interesting because the United States is in this group. So you got US of A, you got Mexico, Great Britain, Colombia, and Canada. So let's who hasn't started? OJ hasn't started. Let's go OJ. What's your predictions on this?
Okay. So USA has just a studly lineup. And then God, that's tough after that. It's not going to be Great Britain. I honestly think I want to go Mexico.
All right.
Yep, that's what Adam, I'm going with. Yeah. So definitely Team God, USA.
I thought I'd take that upset with. Yeah. I thought it was definitely. So you're going Mexico as well, Adam, right?
But so my point. So talking about US. So obviously our offense is phenomenal. However, our pitching is less than desired for sure. So that's the reason why I don't think we're going to make it too far. Maybe second round, but I think we'll get through this round for sure. And I think from looking at the other teams, obviously Great Britain, they're definitely the underdog here. I think that Mexico probably will be trailing. Will be the second team that gets through for sure.
I definitely thought that. I looked at this and I go, okay, I think the two favorites that come out of this group are definitely USA. And Colombia, but I feel that Mexico does have some good baseball players for sure,
and they got good pitching too, you know.
Yeah, they do.
Pitchers. Yeah. So that's why, I personally went with them. I thought that Mexico was a little bit more of, I guess, an upset compared to like Colombia. But I definitely agree with you. Great Britain is good for them to be there. But I don't see them winning. And same thing with the rest.
Yeah,
pretty much. All right, let's get to the last group here. The last group is very interesting because you have two major heavyweights, and then you have two that have always done well, and then one kind of, I would say, outlier, although they haven't done bad before. So in Group D, you have the Dominican Republic, you have Israel, Nicaragua, Puerto Rico, Venezuela. I'll go ahead and start with this one. I think this is kind of easy. I have the two best teams out of this one, the two heavyweights, Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
No, right. No. I mean, I don't see any, like Venezuela is a team that I think can compare with Dominican Republic, in Puerto Rico. I think they can, but I just think that especially over, it's not just down to one game. I think that the depth of the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico are going to be able to take over this group. What about you guys? Let's start with you, OJ.
I actually was thinking the same thing. Dominican and Puerto Rico. Really, they should make Puerto Rico part of the USA team just to make everything more fair for the field. Or I guess they split us up to make things more fair for the field, huh?
Right. They split us up to make it more fair. For sure.
Well, I want us to be more likely to win.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, I mean, like a good portion of MLB players come from the Dominican and Puerto Rico, so it's pretty hard to not put them first coming out of that group. Exactly right.
Yeah, Adam, what about you?
So from my perspective, Puerto Rico, they're going to be without Carlos Carrera, for example. However, I really think that they will ultimately be one of the top two teams with the Dominican Republic, even though I'm kind of torn. I'm looking at Venezuela and they've got a good healthy roster as well. I don't know. And they're going to have, and they've got Miguel Cabrera as well. They've got a lot of good guys on their team, so their offense is pretty decent. So, man, you know what? Just to switch it up, I'm actually going to go Dominican Republic, and I'll go with
Venezuela.
Venezuela, just to switch it up.
And you're not picking Israel?
No. Israel and Nicaragua have definitely got their work cut out for them, for sure.
Through our minor leaguers today, so
yeah.
Although most of our pitchers were actual guys, but our lineup was like almost entirely career minor leaguers. So
let's take a look real quick at the United States lineup here, because I do have that. Now, I'm going to put a caveat on this. So it's going to be by positional order. What that means is, so if you're not used to scorecarding, right, the number two when you scorecard is the catcher, three is first base, so on and so forth. So this is not the actual batting lineup, but this is the projected starting lineup, if that makes sense. It's just not the batting lineup. Okay. So what they have right now is JT Realmuto to be the catcher. He plays, obviously, for the Phillies. Goldie's going to be the first baseman. Then Tim Anderson from the Chicago White Sox will be playing second. Arenado at third base. Trey Turner playing shortstop. He plays for the Phillies. Kyle Tucker in left field plays for the Phillies. Mike Trout in center plays for the Angels. Mookie Betts, right fielder, obviously, for the Dodgers. And Pete Alonso will be playing DH for the Mets. So, Adam, I'll start with you on this question here, because you've already kind of mentioned the offense here. But I mean, I think this is a pretty potent roster, like offense here. But do you think there's another player out of here, U.S. born player, that you would have liked to have seen instead?
I mean, our offense is pretty stacked. I'm not really worried about the offense, honestly, here. I'm really worried about the pitching. I'm satisfied with this lineup overall. You know, we've got a couple Cardinals here. Obviously, you know, we got Goldie and Arenado, you know. I feel like we are well represented there.
with Mike Trout and Mookie Betts and, you know, Kyle Tucker out in the outfield. I think that we've got it covered. So, yeah, I feel pretty comfortable, honestly, about that lineup and about our offense overall. Like I said, my main concern is really just the pitching because.
Yeah, which we'll get to in just a second.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but go ahead.
No, OJ, what are your thoughts on this lineup?
I'm not usually a fan of having Phillies players in the field, especially the outfield. So I don't know about Kyle Tucker. Maybe I'd rather have Lars Nootbaar, but whatever, he chose to go play for Japan. Yeah,
I was gonna say that's not available, unfortunately.
I'm like Adam Wainwright, like you should be representing this country, but whatever. but anyway, yeah, I mean, obviously the lineup's great. The rotation is not probably as bad as it. I mean, it's decent, especially when you look around at all the other countries, right?
Let's go through the rotation right now. And this is 1 through 5 of what they're currently stating. So Waino is the number one, Nick Martinez from the Padres, number two, Brady Singer from the Royals. Number three, Kyle Freeland from the Rockies, and then Lance Lynn, the old St. Louis Cardinal, who's playing for the White Sox now. They do have Miles Michaelis as number seven on the rotation, so most likely it'll be a long reliever and won't actually start pitch, which is kind of crazy because he had a better year than Waino did last year.
Well, yeah. They're going to all these starters pitch very short outings. Like I think I saw there's like a
that's a rule. Something. Yes.
Yeah.
Just like they do in the All-Star games. So
you're gonna probably potentially two guys as starters per outing or something like that. Potentially.
Well, it just depends on obviously, you know, what's going on in the game. You know what I mean? But that would make most sense.
Yeah, especially if you got an elimination game or something. I bet Michaelis sees plenty of play.
Yeah, maybe he'll come in and be our DH. You know what I mean? He can just hit the ball a little bit or something like that. Well, maybe he'll get into the field that way, being the DH.
Shohei's
I'm being sarcastic.
Shohei's out there pitching and hitting. Shohei's out there pitching and hitting.
Yeah, but Miles Michaelis is not
also
not Tony. I mean, like. Yeah. Go on, OJ. What were we saying?
Oh, so he's also a pitcher from the Japanese league.
Yeah, it's true. I think this, honestly, this roster is pretty good for the Cardinals. It's just going to be, can we beat Puerto Rico? Can we beat Dominican Republic, right? I think that's going to be the real question coming down.
That's where I think we're going to have an early exit probably in the second round, in my opinion. But that's just that's what I see what's happening. Prove me wrong.
Negative Nelly.
Prove me wrong. That's all I'm going to say.
Right. Let's talk about some of the Cardinals. We've already alluded to quite a few of them in the World Baseball Classic. So out of the, 20 teams, right? Yeah, 20 teams that are in the, in the tournament. We are actually representing 11 teams, meaning the Cardinals have players for 11 out of those 20 teams. United States, we've already talked about, has Goldie, Arenado, Michaelis, and Waino. Panama, we have three. We have Ivan Herrera. We also have two minor league players, the outfielder LJ Jones, and then our right-handed pitcher, Wilfredo Pereira. And then we have two pitchers that are on the Mexico team. The Mexican team, Jojo Romero and Giovanni Gallegos. Then we have two on the Colombian team. And OG, you might need to help me with this one because I don't remember this guy on a roster, but they say he's on our MLB roster. But Humero
Zuniga?
Zuniga? Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's Zuniga.
I don't recognize that name at all.
I don't either.
Well, he was in the. I think he was in the. You know, he's just. I thought he was just in the minors originally. I don't
know. Yeah, he's probably in the 40-man roster, but playing for AAA. That would make sense.
Maybe. Okay. I think so. I believe so.
Yeah. They also have Oscar Mercado, the outfielder, who is in the our AAA roster. We have two pitchers from the minors going to the Great Britain. right? And then here we go to Great Britain. We give them some, you know, some minor pitchers.
Well, they can.
Oh, we have the right hand
minor leaguers.
Yeah.
Right. We have a right hand pitcher Joseph King, and then you have outfielder Matt Kopernak. Right. It's not Kaepernick. It's Kopernak. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kopernak.
Kopernak. Yeah. Right. Matt Kopernak.
Can you imagine how bad that's going to be? Those guys are going to get to go as their first game. They're going to get to face a lineup that has Nolan Arenado, Paul Goldschmidt, and Mike Trout in it. It's
just ridiculous. I'm stupid. Yeah, go for it. They're getting a trip out of it. So, you know, it's whatever. So what?
Represent your country.
They get to represent their country. You know, it is what it is. It's a cool experience. That's all. So there you go.
We'll get to see a lot of the fans in the stands as they watch the balls fly out of the park.
Interesting, though, just a little tidbit here. Talking about Matt Kopernak, he actually hit for the cycle in Double A last year. So there you go.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
For him. Huh? All right. So then we also have, as you said, OJ, and even you, Adam, you said this as well, Tommy Edmonds playing for Korea. Japan, we have a representative of Lars Nootbaar is going, he's playing for Japan. We have Yenesis Cabrera, playing for Dominican Republic, Andre Pallante for Italy, Bro Neal playing for Canada. And then we have one for Israel. It's the infielder Noah Midlinger. He's a minor league player as well that we have in our system.
I didn't know we actually had
an Israeli dude.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Well, good to know. So
I didn't know cool. that either. So
that's how many total players that we're going to go to 11 teams. That's I wasn't counting.
16 or 19.
16 total. Sorry. 19. Okay, yeah. Cool. Well, we're represented then. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually it is really cool. It is also kind of lame, though. Like if you're not I feel like if you're not born in a country, you shouldn't represent that country. Right. Like. I don't know.
Well, no. I disagree because like there are certain circumstances that don't allow you. So, okay, for example, are people that are born overseas in German base, but you know it's a United States base, but they're in Germany.
Yeah,
are they
American.
United States?
It's based upon their parents. Yeah, it's based upon their parents.
Also, technically, if they're born on the embassy, that's American soil. So
that's true.
No, your point is taken. Yeah, if somebody's on vacation and they have birth, okay.
And sure. They're natural. Yeah, because they get citizenship or because they're parents. Yep.
But to me, if you get born and raised in like, entirely within another country, it's like, that's your country, dude. Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. I will also play devil's advocate to that one as well. So there's a lot of NHLers. So Wayne Gretzky, he's not – American, but he has one of his primary homes here in St. Louis because he loves the American culture. He loves St. Louis first and foremost, but he played here for years or whatever on a work visa and stuff like that. So that can happen. There's a lot of Russian players that live here full time. They don't go back to Russia. Obviously because there's a lot of political discourse and stuff that's happening in Russia right now. I'm not going to get on to that tangent, but they fell in love with the way that America is in a sense, and they didn't want to go back. So I think there are certain circumstances that can happen. I just don't think they should be free willy nilly about it and be like, for example, in the World Cup. So if I'm US born, okay, I'm U.S. born, but I don't make the U.S. roster. Mexico can come to me, even though I don't have any lineage at all from Mexico. I've never played in Mexico or anything like that. Just say I'm an MLS player. They can come to and say, do you want to play for Mexico? We'll make you a citizen.
Right.
Like, I don't like that. I
agree. Whereas, like, Nootbaar, he's American. You know, he was born in California, but his mother's Japanese. So, and he obviously has, and he also has, you know, he played with a lot of Japanese high school players as well. So. You know,
there's obviously there's behind it for him and Tommy Edmund and all that. It just seems
for sure.
I don't know.
No, it seems
like some of the things Josh was talking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if there's actually no tie at all, like, okay, it's like, okay, that's just ridiculous. You know, there. I think one of your parents and, you know, needs to definitely be a native to that country for sure.
Yeah.
And obviously some sort of influence over you, you know, per se, to get an invite. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think that, you know, Puerto Rico is going to be, you know, calling up, you know, called Paul Goldschmidt as much as they would love to. I don't think that there's any connection there. So,
yeah. And I don't want to make it sound like I'm not happy that Knut Barr is playing for Japan. Like, I think that's cool because, you know, it helps introduce the Cardinals to a whole nother market. And, like, obviously,
sure,
they're really enjoying him over there. So, like, that's pretty cool. I guess I would just rather see him playing for USA, though.
Oh, I totally would, too. Agree. Absolutely.
And I will throw one more, and not really a wrench into it or whatever, but one more, like, caveat to it. So, say you are Lars Nootbaar, right? And, you know, you go out there and I say there's even tryouts, because I don't know how they did the selection and stuff like that. But they say, hey, you know what? You're not going to be able to play. You just, we have too many stacked players, right? But Japan comes to you and says, you have an, we, you know, you can come play for us. You will be playing in, you know, and you won't even be on a bench player. You're going to be playing in the tournament and stuff like that. To me, it kind of reminds me of a senior or like a junior or senior on a football team and like a high school football team. That's a really good team, but like, there's a lot of players that are younger than them that are just better than that junior or senior. And that junior or senior decides to play for junior varsity, for JV, instead of playing for varsity, because then that way they can be the starter there rather than being a bench rider. You know what I mean? Yeah. And stuff like that. I mean, so
that would ever happen, but maybe even a better analogy is college sports. You know, where with a transfer portal,
that's 100%. That's even better.
Yeah.
It's more concise than what I was saying. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. At least you understood what I was saying.
Yeah, you got your point across. Yeah. I probably just shouldn't have used anything.
Right. Yeah. It might have limped there, but we got across the finish line. All right.
Yeah.
Anyways, speaking of limping there, I mean, I guess getting across the finish line, let's talk about some Battle Hawks. I think ugly loss. Yeah. Good call. Ugly loss to DC, I think, this past week. Well, it wasn't like we were blown out.
It was,
but it
ugly.
Didn't it get
by 6 points.
It just ended very ugly, though. That's the point, you know.
Oh, okay. I got you. No,
obviously, the big brawl at the end and whatever, and a lot of players were ejected, had some suspensions. Sure. Beer snakes were spilt all over the freaking ground. It was a chaos.
All about. That's okay with me. I mean,
but we have a rival now, I think. We have a true rival. So
yeah,
there you go.
Because the Vipers aren't good enough to be a rival.
No, they suck now. So it's like, yeah, whatever. So I'm glad that we actually have a decent rival we can go up against. So
yeah. The question is, are we the heel or the face in the script?
Did you repeat that?
Right?
Yeah, I didn't catch that.
Or the face? Are we the heel or the face for this script? That's what I'm asking you.
I actually have never heard of that statement before. So can you describe that a little bit more? So like,
no, a heel and a face, like in wrestling, like the face is like one of the good guys, like The Rock was, or John Cena.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I got you. The heel being the villain, and then the face being the hero. Yeah. Yeah.
So, since, you know, obviously this is all scripted because The Rock's running it.
For sure. Saying,
are you going to be the heel or the face? Are we the bad guys the country is supposed to root against?
I mean, based upon what I saw, I think we're in the heroic role. I mean,
hell yes.
I definitely think so.
I think you're probably right, because
I mean, look at our freaking logo alone. That looks like a heroic freaking badass symbol.
Sword that has wings. I mean, that's awesome.
I mean,
it's heroic.
Is that not heroic enough?
It does. Okay. The colors, you know, blue and silver, blue and white. It's like good guy colors. For sure.
100%. Whereas the defenders, you know, they are literally on defense. They're you know,
they're literally the red team. They're the red team.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and their fans are throwing lemons on the freaking ground, you know, on the field. They're taking beer snakes and throwing them on the field. Their players are starting fights and the brawls. Black. So, yeah, they're the antagonist for sure. Yeah. They're the heels.
Okay. Thank you. I'm glad you see it the same way I do.
Definitely.
Oh my gosh. So let's get to some actual football talk.
Well, this is the XFL, so I understand OJ's point. So there you go.
So for me, the reason why I say this was an ugly loss wasn't for the fact that we lost by six or we got blown out, because we definitely didn't. But there's two things here that I came away with. One, we can't rely on our freaking defense to do everything. Our offense has been completely stagnant.
Oh, man,
and I took a look. Our first two series, run the ball for 2 yards, run the ball again for -1 yards, check down on a bubble screen. That happened for both of our first two possessions. And they kept doing that. Run twice, bubble screen. Hell, dude, if we have AJ McCarron, which is supposed to be the quote unquote most NFL ready quarterback out of the XFL, and we have big receivers, why the hell are we not throwing the ball downfield?
I get it. They're right. Like,
well, the plan is because the DC defenders move so much that we want to make sure they can't do that. So we're just going to quickly throw the ball. Like, what? Just fucking throw the ball back.
Literally, like, here it is. We were trying to do the 4th and 15, the alternate to the onside kick at the end of the game. And literally, he just holds on to the ball and goes down. Like, didn't even give it a shot. I'm like, bro, come on.
Yeah, at least
Hail Mary that shit. You know what I mean? Like, it just goes to show you that it's either he's overthrowing constantly or he's just running with the ball and doesn't know what to do with it. And we're only going, like you said, 2 or 3 yards at most, and then we'll lose yardage. And next thing you know, it's fourth down and we just haven't made any progress. And it seems to be every single time. Once in a great while, we actually will, he'll make the connection and we'll get something into the end zone, but it's few and far between. He passed for 262 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 2 interceptions as well. He had 2 interceptions as well. That's the other point. So,
yeah, but I will say that both of those really were not his
fault. I know. Like
the first
know.
One,
I'm just saying.
The receiver fell down, and the second one was a tip ball. Totally understand that, right?
Sure.
But the thing about it is, I truly believe the only reason why this game was not an absolute blowout is for the fact our defense was able to get takeaways. Our defense was able to make stops, because there was times where that DC offense was clicking. And this is the classic bend, don't break defense, but we've been rewarded on the tail end of these drives by getting takeaways at the right time. Forcing fumbles, interceptions, whatever have you, and it's given the ball back. But there was like 2 or 3 times, especially week 2, this happened where we got the ball back in plus territory, and what do we do? 0 points. Twice off two fumbles, zero points on a miss on a punt and a missed fucking field goal.
And that's the other point too. That's the other point, is that obviously we're missing field goals like terribly, which is just embarrassing.
That's the other thing, though. I mean, you can't sit there. Take away credit for our defense getting turnovers and then not take away the turnovers our offense makes. If you're going to evaluate it, I mean, you think about it, we literally handed them a touchdown by some guys. So that's 6 points right there. Oh, and then our kicker missed a field goal. That's a win right there. I mean, I'm just saying, it's not like, I don't think it was a bad game, to tell you the truth. Although what I do find most concerning is that I do feel like the defenders coaches made better adjustments at halftime, and that's why they won ultimately.
For sure. We were still in it, though, technically. Especially even at the end, obviously going for the alternate to the onside kick, we still had a chance to come back and win that game, no doubt about it. And obviously, if it would have been like the first, week one and week 2, we would have done it. It's just, unfortunately, it wasn't our week to come, to do the miracle comeback special. So,
you do need to play better than that to not have to do that every week.
I mean, as exciting as it is, I don't want to see that consistently, for sure. I agree.
OJ, that's my point too. It's not necessarily the players and what we've been able to do on the field. It's the play calling too, because how do you open it up the game that you want to run the ball? Okay, I understand that. But when you run the ball 4 times and you get a net gain of 2 yards, I get it. It happens, right? But then to immediately not be competitive of throwing to the fucking sticks, that's what gets me, man. It's very equivocal to what we've been talking about the Blues. It's an effort thing. But this time it's the coach going, we don't want to risk throwing an interception. So we're just going to run a bubble screen on 3rd and 9.
Oh, yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I definitely, you know, well, let's, I'm not saying he's not, but let's assume for a second that the coach isn't incompetent, right? And I'll come back to your original question, which is, you have AJ McCarron. Why are you not actually throwing the ball farther downfield, taking advantage of him, right? If the guy's not an idiot, then the only answer is offensive line play. He doesn't have faith in his offensive line. So they feel like they really need to get the run game going to back the defense off to give the linemen a chance in pass protection. Mm-hmm. That's what
and
I
that's
think.
A very good, yeah, and that's a very good analysis of it as well, because that definitely, obviously, running the ball helps the offensive linemen. It backs off the edge rushers. It backs off the linebackers, too, as well. So, you know, obviously, they're not playing super close to the line and getting into those gaps a lot quicker. That's a very good point. But at some point, you got to be competitive, right? And again, to me, running bubble screens on 39, and it wasn't just the first two drives. It happened several times throughout it. I'm like, another fucking screen. I mean, that's all he does. It's like, this is Andy Reid's offense without being Andy Reid. You know what I mean? Where he's able to run these bubble screens, because Kansas City does that shit all the time, but they get like 6 or 7 yards every single time because the execution's there. You know? Yeah. I don't know. To me, you need to run a dig route every once in a while. You need to be able to run post patterns. I haven't really seen that. I've seen flag patterns, which is very weird, because like that seems to be people. It's more popular to throw a post route, because obviously it's the middle of the field and you have more room to run than running flag routes, right? Because running a flag, you're running, but obviously it's to the opposite side and you're running to the corner of the end zone for the most part, or corner of the field, depending on where you're at. And it's like, okay, you have to throw a back shoulder throw and, you know, tap your toes in, and that's it. You know what I mean? There's no room to run. But regardless, we got to get something going in that. It just seems to be that we're afraid to call those plays for some reason. And it, OJ, to your point, it could be for the fact that we're worried about our offensive line breaking down. 100% agree with that. But then we just got to do something, I think, more creative than what we've been doing then.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it'll open up. I mean, because you got to think, with the lack of preparation time they had, that maybe this was part of the plan, and they're planning on opening the playbook up more as the season goes on. That's what until they prove me otherwise.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, let's take a look at something that I'm very excited about here. Home opener is Sunday. Let's go, Kakaw.
Kakaw, I was going to say, I'm expecting a win for a home opener here, so...
And here's the crazy thing about it.
Would you remind me who they're playing?
Arlington. Renegades. Yeah.
Arlington Renegades, yep.
All right, we'll smoke them.
So I got to share two little tiny little snippets for you guys here, statistics, even though they're not really statistics. For our home opener, we know that we've had to open up the 300 seating, and they've continued to open up more and more sections as they go through. There are only 87 tickets left in the 300s, and 212 tickets overall that are not resell. So these are the ones that are being sold on Ticketmaster, and it's not the verified resell, because verified resell, they're like trying to double their money. So there's a lot of those, I don't want to get into that topic, because that to me is going to piss me off, and I really don't want to get into that.
I know,
but
yeah.
So the chances of them opening up, especially for the home opener for the 400s, is very, very slim, because it is Thursday. And technically you have, 200 tickets left, around the fields, and 87 total in the 300s. It would take a lot for them to have to open up the 400s and stuff like that. But I think that if we can continue to win and continue to have the support that we have, they might open up the 400s before the end of the year.
They could very well. And the other point I just wanted to make to that is there's actually another section. I think maybe it is the 400s. You know, there's like a smaller section that's right behind the ones they just opened up. That's not like the true upper deck or whatever. And I'm thinking they may try to go with that one next, potentially. We'll see.
But no, those are boxes. Sure. The 400, those like,
oh, well, yeah, are they?
About
those are the boxes.
Yeah, those tiny ones. Never mind. Those are boxes. Yeah, they're suites.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, never mind then. But yeah, I think with the number of seats that are still available, and there's only a couple games left, and the fact that there's obviously resale tickets that are still available, I don't see them putting 400s up there for sale yet.
But eventually. Now, what I would love for them to do is to open up the 400s and not let these verified resale tickets go to, like, not allow them to do what they're trying to do, which is double their
profit. They're freaking, you know, buying up sections of tickets, and they need to limit, they're going to have to limit, they're going to have to put a limit or whatever on the number of tickets or that people are buying, because obviously, from what I can tell, people are buying like multiple rows of tickets, it looks like, and then trying to flip them. So
yep and I'm telling you, what it would be perfect though, Adam, right now, it'd be perfect for the XFL to combat that, right? So they go, oh, cool. So let's just say these 212 tickets that are being sold on Ticketmaster, they're gone, right? So all you have left is resale. And let's say there's like, and just to keep it simple, 300 resale tickets out there, right? So if I'm The Rock, I'm looking at this going, these guys are legitimately trying to flip and double the price of the tickets. That's bullshit. Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to see what we can do about open up the 400s, and instead of paying $40 that they did for the third, for the 300, do $25 for a ticket up in the 400s. Because you know what? The people in the 300s, there's going to be some people that will pay to go to move down. But anybody that's on the fence, dude, okay, you know what? I can spend $25 to go to a professional football game. You know what I mean? And I think
a lot of people are calling for that, actually, $24, $25 tickets, because they said people will do that in a heartbeat, whereas the other ones are going for like $48 a piece. So they're saying basically half that, and you will see those freaking stands just fill up quick, because no one has a problem spending $20, $25 to go see a football game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it helps too with. Go ahead, OJ.
No, I was just saying I would.
For sure. And it helps. I mean, $20, $25, that's a hell of a steal.
And it really helps lower income families connect not only with this team, not only with the XFL, but to the city more. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. They may not like they go, man, $40. OK, so I'm just saying this, a family of four people, like I'm going to take it back to, you know, my dad when he didn't have a lot of money and stuff like that. You know, he's looking at that going, man, OK, we got two kids, like, can we, you know, sneak them saying that they're under a certain age? They could just sit on our laps and stuff like that. Okay, no, we got to buy four tickets. All right, well, that adds up really freaking quick, right? So instead of $100 for an outing for the entire family to go and watch a football game where your kids can get excited, so you can get excited, obviously it's closer to like $200, $250. Well, for a lot of people, that, I mean, that's going to be obviously your trash, water, electrical, and your cell phone payment. You know what I mean? Whatever it looks like. Yep. I mean, it's,
especially
it's
by the time you pay for parking, transportation, you got to buy food and all this stuff. Yeah, it adds up real quick. Yep. So
I definitely think that if their demand is there, and you've already made your money at this point too. You're going to have a lot of people that are screaming their heads off in the 300s. I think then you need to be able to open it up for the people that can take it a flyer, you know, and just be like, hey, what's going on? I got nothing going on Sunday, right? You want to go to the game? It's only $20. Sure. Yeah, I got nothing else going on.
Yep. And if anything, that'll also help with the Dome as well. I mean, it's been sitting. I mean, yeah, we have the shows that come through every now and then, but they're never really actually using the Dome. And I'd like for us to actually get some use out of that place, you know?
No, they're using it. They have a lot of conventions and shit.
I understand that, but actually use it like for sports, you know, like again. I know that they're doing that once in a while, but I'd like to actually see that happen again, you know. Fill those stands up, you know.
Right.
Get 80,000 people in there.
Yeah, it'll be pretty fun to see.
For sure.
Well, speaking of very fun to see, let's move on to the newest team in town, even though it's, I mean, really they've had a home opener before the Battle Hawks.
Well, technically, I was going to say the Battle Hawks, I guess, are technically newer, at least coming to town, all right?
Yeah, exactly. We haven't seen them yet. But the Soccer Club of St. Louis, so SCLSC, they're now 2-0 after winning their home opener against Charlotte. I do have some stats to run through with that. To kind of put a preface it on this one, though, Charlotte's not necessarily a great team. We were expected to win this one. That's why I felt good for the home opener, especially after beating Austin as well. But it looked like we played a very similar game style than we did when we played Austin. It was possession was 61% in favor of Charlotte, but we had more shots, 11-6. We had 5-3 on shots on goals. We had 3 block shots compared to 1. They dominated, obviously, possession, which dominated passes as well, 509-312. Passing accuracy, 79.2% to 68.3%. So this is something I pointed out last week, that our passing has got to be more crisp. And I think some of that comes with just experience and stuff, too. And these, so the, you know, your first game is, okay, you're that's your first game as a club. So the expectations, this was your first home game. So, you know, you might not have the right weight on the ball when you're passing it and stuff like that. So that can definitely be an issue. Our crosses, 15-10. This was exactly our offensive strategy going into it last time as well, crossing from wide into the box and being able to get inside or in there as well. We didn't win the dual battle this time. It was 63-57, still very close, but we did win more tackles, 15 out of 8. It was 2-3 saves in favor of Charlotte. They had 20 clearances instead of 9 for us. There was a lot of fouls and a lot of cards in this game. There was 8 total yellow cards in this game, 5 for Charlotte and 3 for us, 15 fouls apiece. It was a good game. Obviously, there was another own goal and a gift, so that definitely helped out as well.
Right.
Yeah, I wanted to jump in real quick and say we have definitely been benefiting from some mistakes definitely made by Austin and from Charlotte for sure. You know, we definitely seen mistakes by both of those teams, and we certainly, you know, profited for that. I mean, the fact that the very first goal in St. Louis City SC's history here in St. Louis was an own goal by Charlotte, which is mind boggling, but that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's what happens.
No, it doesn't really. I mean, the odds are though that happening though, an own goal being the very first goal in St. Louis though, that's pretty crazy. I would think. I don't really think that happens too often, probably.
Oh no.
As far as being the very first goal in the city, but anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
that was pretty wild.
That Charlotte, like you were, you know, as you can tell from the yellow cards, they're a physical team, and so I can see why the passing may not look too good against them because. You know, they're going to be sliding all over the place, trying to get in your way. And what was the shot total though?
Shot total was 11-6, and then on in favor of us. And then shots on goal were 5-3 in favor of us again.
I like that idea of if you got a good. I like how we put the ball on net. You know.
Yeah. It, exactly.
Really put some pressure on the defenses and the goalies. It makes them make plays. And
the thing about this too, go on. Sorry.
I was going to say, I think it's interesting that that's the style we've chosen. Whereas it seems like a lot of coaches want to coach like a possession oriented game, you know?
Mm. Yeah. And then going forward, I think, you know, cause we want to talk about, you know, can we keep this going? And I think from looking at their schedule for the next few weeks, I think it's pretty favorable schedule overall. So I think that we can keep the ball rolling here.
Let's go.
Yeah. And so I will actually, OJ, to your point of, you know, putting the shots on net and making the goalies work, you know, get their saves and stuff like that. Right. So Tabat Cortes, which is he's the goaltender for the Belgian national team, but he plays for Real Madrid. He's been their goaltender for a very, very long time. There was one game in particular they were facing, I think, Atletico Madrid. This was either last year or the year before. It's kind of running together. But there was a lot of shot from Atletico Madrid. Now, this guy obviously is a world-class athlete, right? World-class goaltender, period. But you can tell towards the end of the game, because it did go into overtime as well, that he was gassed because he kept having to make these giant, like, you know, like diving saves and was landing on his sides and stuff like that. That wears on your body. You know what I mean? And just constantly doing that. Because these guys, I mean, goaltenders, you are trained to fling your entire body to be able to get your fingertips on a ball. You know what I mean? Even if it's a close one that you know you could probably maybe just step over, you fling your body on it so you can punch it out. You know what I mean? That way you get more momentum on the ball that goes out of it. So that stuff, I think, does wear and tear in your body over a game. So I think that's a very good strategy, especially because, let's be honest, it's the MLS, and a lot of these keepers are not going to be fully tested. You know what I mean? So I think it's a very good strategy. Kind of use it like a hockey mentality in a sense. If you think you have a shot, go for it and see what happens. Cause some chaos.
Well, exactly, because then you wind up with a ball. Even if the goalie makes the save, you got a loose ball now in front of the net. Now the defense is running around. They got to scramble to get it out of there, and that can cause mistakes. You know, so.
Yeah, exactly, because a lot of the times a fullback, you know, like, and this happened to me one time where that was very much like that. Our goalie, this was in grade school, but I remember it vividly. Our goalie made a great save. Dude, great freaking save, right? But unfortunately, the ball didn't spin. It died, like, right there in the box. So I rushed back, and the only thing I'm thinking is kick this ball. Like, get it out of, you know, the box. So, because there's, like, two of, like, their forwards that are coming at it. So I kick the ball. It pops up, and just all it does is it goes right over, like, to the outside of the box to one of the wingers who's right there, gets it on one bounce, and just strikes it into the empty net. You know what I mean? Because it forced an error from me because I wasn't able to collect the ball and be able to punt it the right way. You know what I mean? So, yeah, exactly. And if you can apply that over and over, you're going to see a lot more, too, gifted goals and stuff like that, too. Because, again, these players are not necessarily fully tested yet.
Right.
I think it's going to be fun to see what the soccer club can do. Obviously, they have a lot of fans' hopes and stuff like that. The home opener was electric from what I read. I was not going to be there because I didn't want to have to take out a second mortgage on my house to be able to go to the game. but it looked electric. My aunt was actually she was door dashing around the area downtown, and she was outside. It was a little bit off from the stadium, but she was somewhat relatively close for the third goal. She didn't even know what was going on. She knew that the game was going on, but she didn't know what was going on in the game. But she said it was incredibly loud because obviously it's open air, and she you could hear the yelling and stuff like that. And she's like, I felt like I was several blocks away. I'm like, that's pretty cool though, when you have like 20,000 people screaming.
The place was electric for sure. I watched it all on an Apple TV, and it was amazing. I have to say, our fans were eager and ready to welcome soccer, you know, at the MLS stage to this city. And I think that they will continue to obviously show up for years to come, because I think that they made the right move finally and gave us the expansion team. So I'm glad to see it finally here.
Yeah, and just to see, you know, 30,000 people wearing Purina pink was awesome. I mean, also, sorry, it's magenta. Sorry.
Magenta. Yeah. It is what it is. So
Yeah, I mean, I think the style of play that they have is more fun to watch than a team that just wants to be like ultra conservative, possess the ball.
For sure.
There's like difference between watching a Konzo Martin Mizzou basketball team and a Dennis Gates Mizzou basketball team. Whereas, you know, Konzo Martin had a very successful year, but like, if they were going to win games, they were going to win them like 60-58 or something. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Whereas Dennis Gates's team, they're winning them like they win games that they score at least 70. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Undefeated.
They've been very fun to watch so far, you know. So
yeah, it's just way more exciting, and I kind of like the impression. So I think it's a good choice for STLSC to go with, kind of like a higher shot total, because it gives you more stuff to cheer for and everything. It's just fun.
Yep. So at least we have something to end on that was very positive versus you know, some sad news. So glad to report that.
I have to bring it back up.
No, just saying.
Yeah. Well, guys, as always, it's always a great time talking sports with you guys here in the St. Louis area. Obviously, we got four teams now that we can root for, only missing that basketball team. But speaking of basketball, we got March Madness that's coming up. Anybody that is going to be filling out a bracket, we're going to be filling out a bracket, too. We are going to be playing a fun game here too, very much similar to what Adam and I did for the NFL playoffs as well. We're going to fill out a bracket. We're going to be doing points. It's just for bragging rights, essentially, or maybe for something else. I don't know. We'll have to think about that. But that starts here. The selection is in 3 days. A game start in 5. So we'll get that going too. We also have some new social media. I'm going to throw that over to Adam because you can explain a little bit more. social media side of it than I can.
For sure. Yeah. Thank you. So we actually just started up a couple of our pages just because obviously we're trying to, you know, get our reach out there to the wider audience out there. And we're actually on right now, Facebook and Twitter. You can check us out on Facebook. If you just type in the Hometown Losers, that's LOUSERS podcast. Check us out. Give us a like. We'll definitely be posting our episodes out there. But also, we would like to be we'd like some of your feedback, and we'll be posting questions from time to time. Also, if you're on Twitter, check us out. We are at Hometown Losers. That is our handle. Or you just type in the Hometown Losers podcast. You'll check us out there. Very similar as well. We'll be posting polls, getting your feedback and whatnot. So looking for some interaction with our listeners and getting the word out. So like us, share it, tell your friends, and I'd appreciate it.
Sir, it's going to be fun. I think that we can potentially, for any listeners that want to get involved with us in our brackets as well for bragging rights, you can definitely do that as well. We can definitely put that up there and have a lot of fun with it. So until next week, guys, it was always fun. I always mess this up. I don't know why, but on the outro stuff. But it's always fun talking to you guys. We will see you guys next time here on the Hometown Losers podcast.
This is OJ, and I wanted to thank you guys for listening to the equivalent of three dudes sitting at a bar talking about sports. We'll catch you next week on the Hometown Losers.